It's time for Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you have a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now at 252-222-4848.
And we'd like to welcome Cecil Harvell from Harvell and Collins joining us on the line. Good morning, Cecil. How are you?
Good morning. How are you doing?
Good. I guess you sent Wes off to court this morning early. He's not here in studio.
Yes, he's a busy guy as always.
Well, you know what?
All is well.
Yeah, all is well, and it just shows you that life goes on despite all of the obstacles we had over the past 13 months. You know, you have to keep your legal affairs in line, and you know the process continues to play out. And Wes is in court doing just that for one of his clients.
Today, Michael, what I thought we would talk about is the concept of, and it begins with the question, what is a fiduciary?
Yeah.
That's a mighty big word, and let's kind of decipher work down that word today, if you will.
Sure.
Fiduciary, basically, Mike, is a person or an institution. Sometimes it can be, you know, a bank or a trust company. But it is basically an entity and or person who holds resources for the benefit of another. The assets that the fiduciary is working with are not the assets, the personal assets of the fiduciary. They are the assets of another.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for instance, a fiduciary is an agent under a power of attorney. A fiduciary is an executor in an estate.
Right.
The fiduciary is an administrator in an estate. Again, someone who is in a capacity whereby they have responsibility, they actually have quasi-legal title to the assets that they are controlling, but they are controlling them for the benefit of another. And so they are known in the law as a fiduciary, and I might say that being a fiduciary, you know, is a very complicated and complex thing to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it requires many times the assistance of a lawyer or some guidance by a lawyer so that, you know, all of the ducks stay in a row.
Right.
Because if for some reason something is not in a row and there is an issue or there's a problem or a letdown, then the fiduciary can be held personally responsible.
Oof.
For those kinds of errors, if you will, in either performance, satisfaction of their duties, or even sometimes in a certain judgment that they might make.
You hear the term, and what I think our listeners are more or less exposed to that term, fiduciary responsibility. And I was always equating fiduciary equals financial, but it's more than just financial responsibility. It's everything, is it not? Fiduciary?
Well, generally speaking, a fiduciary is one that is acting for another with regard to some sort of financial.
Okay.
Well-being. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
If you're thinking about such a thing as, say, an agent under a health care power of attorney or medical proxy or a HIPAA release, those are not really within the context of the law known as fiduciaries because they really are not holding property, if you will, for the benefit of another.
Mm-hmm. I got you.
Right.
Okay.
Now, one of the ways in which this gets applied, there's so many angles I could go with right now, Mike, but one thing that we talk about a lot at the law firm is that folks sometimes will say, well, I would like for this particular child or person to be my agent under my power of attorney. And then when you say, well, who would you like to be the executor, they will say, well, I would like my other child or my other friend to be the executor.
Wow.
And mm-hmm. And so, you know, we as the lawyer then kind of have to catch that and explain as best as we can that, you know, your agent under your power of attorney is going to be someone who is you know, paying your bills, signing your tax return, dealing with any insurance claims that you have, medical or otherwise, and they are going to be more or less up to speed on what has and has not been done in your financial life, because after all, they're the ones under the power of attorney as your agent who have been handling those details.
Mm-hmm.
And now when we pass on to have a whole different person be the executor, and have them take over the financial affairs from an executor standpoint, not knowing what bills have been paid, what tax returns have been filed or not filed, what insurance claims have been satisfied or not satisfied, you can see that that is a bit in conflict. And so it is best that your fiduciary, under your durable power of attorney, and your fiduciary who will serve as your executor in your estate, be the same person. And so in your power of attorney, I hereby appoint John Doe. In my will, I hereby appoint John Doe as my executor. That is the best advice that a lawyer can give with regard to the fiduciary under certain documents. We, of course, have talked about, Mike, many times that, you know, you have to have backups and alternates to John Doe. We can't just in a will name, you know, one executor, or in a power of attorney name one agent, because, you know, we need backups. What if that one agent or that one executor is unable or maybe even unwilling, or simply, you know, is also, you know, has passed on for whatever reason.
Right.
So there needs to be a series of appointments, you know, option one, option two, option three. Yes.
Have a deep bench. Have a bench in our
Correct.
Bench. Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
We talked on other shows with the executor receiving a certain compensation by statute in North Carolina. Does a fiduciary receive any compensation?
Yes. The general rule begins with the fiduciary receives what the document itself, the durable power of attorney, the trust agreement, the last will and testament. Generally, they receive what the document dictates that they are to receive as compensation. A well-drafted trust agreement or power of attorney is going to have a compensation provision in it. And so that's where we begin with compensation provisions. With regard to estate settlement, there are statutes on point that give all of us guidance. And the general rule is that an executor is entitled, Mike, to up to 5% of the value of the personal property being cash, liquid assets, CDs, bonds, stocks that pass through the estate.
Right.
They are not entitled to 5% of the value of the real property, which would be the home place or the house or the family farm or whatever it is. If the will instructs that the executor sell the property, then they could be entitled to further commission on the real property. But generally the commission, which by the way is approved by the clerk of court, is up to 5% of the value of the liquidity that is in the estate. One thing to point out here, Mike, before we go to a break, that I think is a real practical way to think about this. You know, everyone is entitled and does have a thought or opinion about values. You know, are real property values, land values, going to continue to increase?
Sure.
Maybe. Is the stock market going to stay at this all-time high? Are startup companies a good stock investment, or should it be more like a blue chip, like a, you know, Coca-Cola or something of Exxon, some sort of stock, you know, Duke that's been around for many, many decades?
Yeah.
Well, we all have an opinion, and we're all very entitled to our individual opinion. But when you are a fiduciary, you are not allowed to necessarily base your actions on your personal opinions. You are to base your actions on basically what a reasonable person, whatever that means, of course, mm-hmm. but whatever a reasonable person, man or woman, would believe the case to be. So, for instance, you may not be able to just make investments with monies that you're holding for the benefit of another in upstart companies. That might not be what a reasonable person would do. Also, a reasonable person might feel that that particular real property is at its highest and best use and value right now, and really should be at this time, due to the market, it should be liquidated, or potentially it should be held on to. Now, aren't these all very interesting questions, Mike?
Yes.
Because now you begin to see the gray area, you know, mm-hmm. the area where there's lots of questions and lots of concern on behalf of the fiduciary, and they're going to have to do a very good job at documenting the decisions that they make so as to be able to substantiate that their decisions are reasonable person decisions.
Yeah, that's a weighty topic there, and a weighty responsibility by the fiduciary. Let's take a break on that note. We'll take a short break here, and if you wish to learn more about Harvell and Collins, call them today, 252-726-9050, or go online to harvellandcollins.com. We're talking with Cecil Harvell, and we'll continue the conversation about fiduciary when we return from this break. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal, and joining us on the call is Cecil Harvell from Harvell and Collins, and we're talking about a very weighty subject, fiduciary, and we're continuing to unpack all that is meant in that responsibility of being a fiduciary. Cecil, continue the conversation. It's fascinating.
So I think that what we try to do to guide our clients through these gray zones, if, for instance, they're selling a piece of real property, make sure that we have good appraisal work, maybe even, you know, more than one appraisal where we can make sure that we're averaging the two, maybe some letters from some realtors or from the president of the homeowners association, something to really substantiate the fact that now is a good time and at a very good price to sell the real property.
Mm-hmm.
Again, those are the kinds of things where you do need good documentation.
Absolutely, because you don't cross that one T and the whole plan goes off the rails. So it'd be wise to have good legal counsel in that to help you stay on the road.
That's right. In terms of managing the financial liquid, I keep using that word, and in the law what I'm basically meaning are stocks, bonds, securities, accounts, IRAs, anything other than real property in the law is many times called personal property or the liquid assets, because they can be liquidated after all, cashed in.
Right.
In terms of managing those under a power of attorney as the agent or even as the executor of the estate, if they're going to need to be held for a while, the general rule of thumb is to kind of maintain the position of the principal. If you take over an IRA account or a stock account on behalf of an elder person, and you are now the agent under the power of attorney managing it, you probably are going to stay in a safe harbor if you just simply maintain the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're going to not stay in a safe harbor is to exert your personal opinions relative to their investment.
Yep.
And potentially liquidate all of their investments and purchase what you think is appropriate. Again, you know, they are not your resources. So your duty is to is to act on behalf of the the principal, much as they would. So we, when we are serving as a fiduciary for an individual, we try as best as we can to maintain the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
We listen carefully, as we should, to the agents that the principal had hired, their CPA, their investment broker, their particular manager of their farm, or whatever the case might be. Because after all, that's where the principal had confidence, and we want to pick up and step into the shoes of the moccasins of the principal. And absent some real overriding factor, we probably are going to be in a very safe place if we just continue to keep the status quo.
Listeners might be wondering, Cecil, and this is a very, like we said, a very weighty subject, but at what point in one's life, generally speaking, does the term fiduciary come into their normal lexicon and they start thinking, I need a fiduciary? At what stage in life, and is it the person who is the elder, or is it the maybe the son or the daughter that brings up this subject? Who starts it?
Well, that's a good question, Mike, and we answer that question with, every single adult, and an adult is anyone over the age of 18,
okay,
really technically needs to have a durable power of attorney. I mean, a 35-year-old, 25-year-old, God forbid, can be in a tragic accident and have a lawsuit that needs to be filed on their behalf,
mm-hmm,
and there's no one to do it, no appointment of a fiduciary, no agent under a power of attorney, then the lawyers are going to be in a position where they're going to have to go to court and get a guardian to serve as that fiduciary so as to be able, to proceed on with the lawsuit. Did you follow that, Mike?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. It can happen anytime.
Everybody,
yeah.
You know, 25, 35-year-olds file tax returns.
Sure.
Who's going to sign the tax return if they've had a sudden setback through an accident or an illness? So we all need a durable power of attorney. Certainly as we enter into our, later years, 50, 60, 70, 80, absolutely a critical document is the durable power of attorney, so that we have someone that can appropriately handle our financial affairs. That document also, Mike, needs to be highly detailed. It needs to be very specific. We are not a fan of the, we are not a proponent, if you will, of the power of attorney where you just simply initial certain abbreviated powers. Banks and registers of deeds and Department of Motor Vehicles and stock companies, Fidelities and whoever they happen to be, they do not like those very generic powers of attorney. The more detail there is in your durable power of attorney, the safer you're going to be in knowing that the person who is relying on the power of attorney is going to honor it.
Yeah.
There needs to be specificity. There needs to be clarity in the grants of authority. We see so many powers of attorney where the person has a power of attorney, but they've downloaded it from some website,
yeah,
or they've gotten it and just kind of done a bunch of initials here or there. And the document, even though they, quote, have the document creates more questions than it does answers.
Yeah, good point there. I think you've answered that. And even though Wes Collins isn't here in studio, his words are ringing in my head. Be cautious about buying docs in a box. You can get what you pay for online versus sitting down with actual legal counsel face to face. And you can do that by calling Harvell and Collins at 252-726-9050. Go online to harvellandcollins.com as well. We'll take a short break here and come back with our closing segment of Let's Talk Legal. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal. And Cecil, we have about 2 minutes to go.
So we the word guardian came up mm-hmm. a moment ago,
yeah.
and a guardian basically many times is appointed by the court when someone simply does not have a durable power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
They do not have a document, or either the document is defective in some way, as I was just talking about, did not have the kind of detail that it needs, and there's legal business to do. There are assets to protect. There are tax returns to sign. There's maybe a lawsuit that needs to be filed, and no one has the legal authority to do that. And so the family or is forced to petition for a guardian, and a guardian is similar to what one might call a court-appointed power
sure.
of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And the guardian is a fiduciary. They now are going to take over assets that are in the ownership realm of the principal, and they are going to now manage them. What's interesting about a guardianship is that due to the fact that there's no document in place, like a durable power of attorney, there is no waiver of accountings, and therefore the guardian is going to need to file an accounting on an annual basis with the clerk of court of what the assets happen to be, where they are, what has been spent on behalf of the principal,
yep.
And what assets are remaining, and is going to have to make very specific accountings with the clerk of court. This can add, as one would expect, to
yeah.
the expense of a situation, because many times people will need to hire a lawyer to do those accountings for them.
Cecil, you shed some light on a very complex situation, but you made it very understandable, and we thank you for that. Call Harvell and Collins today.